From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Every spring, I make a promise to learn to recognize a few more voices, bird voices, that is, to try to tune in more observantly to the members of the incredible chorus around me. When Nathan Peeplow's new book, The Peterson Field Guide to Bird Sounds of Eastern North America, arrived in March, I thought, help has arrived, and indeed it has. Just as the birds are trying to tell one another something with the sounds they make, we too need a vocabulary for what we're hearing. Otherwise, it can be overwhelming, to say the least. The book helps us to learn to describe what we're hearing. Nathan is an expert ear birder who has been intensively studying and recording bird sounds since 2003. A South Dakota native, he lives in Boulder and teaches writing and rhetoric at the University of Colorado. I'm so glad he agreed to join me today to help us understand a little bit more about what the birds are saying and how to be a better listener. So welcome, Nathan Peeplow, to Away to Garden.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. The more I spend time with the book, the more I'm starting to get it, because it's not like a regular field guide where you just look at pictures and say, oh, I'm looking for a red throat with a black crown and a, do you know what I mean, and a wing bar.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of book, but it's very interesting. You describe it as, in the introduction, as a dictionary for the language of the birds.
That's the idea.
Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit
more. I basically had to, there really weren't any field guides to bird sounds before mine came out. I kind of had to invent a new kind of book in order to create a field guide to sounds.
Right.
And so the book illustrates the sounds. It creates a picture of each sound using what we call a spectrogram,
right,
which is a computer-generated graph of the sound. And reading a spectrogram is kind of like reading music. It's the same basic principle. You read from left to right. The high notes are at the top. The low notes are at the bottom. It's just that the note shapes are different based on what the bird sounds like, what its tone quality is.
Right.
So if you learn a few basic shapes and you learn a couple other tricks and rules, you can learn how to picture a sound, and you can also learn to look at a spectrogram and understand what it's going to sound like.
Right. And there's a companion sound website to the book as well, petersonbirdsounds.com. So you can kind of use both tools concurrently to deepen your understanding. How many years in the making was this? This is not a simple thing what you've done. And as I said, I'm just beginning. I've had the book for a couple of months, and each time I use it, I say, oh, I didn't get that until just now. It's a lot of layers.
I set out to create this book in 2003, so it was 14 years in the making for the Eastern volume, and I am currently hard at work on the Western volume.
And when we say East, people should understand, don't tune out if you're not on the literal East Coast. It's not just the Eastern Seaboard. The Eastern United States is a big area, yes?
And it includes, everything basically, including the Great Plains, the Midwest, the South, and the East is all in the East.
Yeah. But the same kinds of ideas that birds have a language, that we're that these pictures, these spectrograms help to depict them. This is all good for anyone anywhere who's learning to bird by ear, as I keep trying to do better. So I want to get sort of right back to that dictionary and language idea. Like, what are the birds talking about? Because it's not just like, oh, I hear the cardinal, oh, I hear the... there's language going on. And so what are the birds talking about? I mean, I when I hear like the many catbirds who nest in my garden, they sound like a bunch of drunks at a bar or something. You know, they're talking nonsense, it sounds like, but I don't think they are. I bet they're saying something, yeah?
Yeah. Each species of bird has its own language. And so you need to kind of learn each different sound from each different species and figure out what it means. We can use the cliff swallow as an example.
Uh-huh. So the cliff swallow, and this is a bird, if people don't know it, is where approximately does it reside? Where do people see it?
It lives all across the country.
Mm-hmm.
In the South, it's only in the South in migration, but otherwise it's almost everywhere. They live in colonies under bridges and in culverts. They build nests, and then they fly out during the day and they capture insects on the wing.
Okay, like the other swallows we see acrobatically doing or aerobatically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So I know you brought along some sound files. So shall we listen to? Do you want to tell us what we're going to hear the cliff swallow say?
Yeah.
Okay.
So cliff swallows have a very simple language, but they have several different, we can call them words, in their language. One is the word that they use for danger, and that's this zeer call that they give.
Okay, so let's hear that. Well, that does sound like something's wrong. And we just repeated that. The bird wouldn't necessarily do it in that fast progression, would it?
Yeah, well, that sound file was looped, but that's the same basic call that they would give over and over again if they were upset. So you'll hear it if you go under the bridge and get close to their nest. They'll all come fly around your head, and they'll say, zeer, zeer, zeer. All of them will say the same thing.
Okay.
Basically means danger.
Okay. And what's next in their vocabulary?
They have another call that I call Bert, that they give, which basically is a contact call. So they're basically telling one another, I'm here, I'm checking in. It's the call that the parents will give when they're approaching the nest to say, I'm coming in with food.
Uh-huh. So
it's like, it's just like kind of letting somebody know that you're in the area.
Okay. Should we hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, very different.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the here I am.
Yeah,
by
exactly.
The cliff swallow. Okay. And what else
and
does it say?
They've got another call that is really fascinating, and this one we don't know if any other swallows have this kind of call or not. There's a call that they give only on cool, cloudy days. Because on cool, cloudy days, it becomes difficult to be a cliff swallow because all the flying insects stay down in the grass when it's cool and rainy. And so they have to search very hard for swarms of flying insects, which is their food. And if one of the cliff swallows from the colony gets lucky and finds a bunch of flying insects on a cool, cloudy day, they'll give this special call that's called the squeak call. And it means, I've found food, come quick and get some before they all fly away.
Okay, and how does that, let's hear that one. Oh my goodness, that is excited.
And that's one where, you know, you would only hear it once and not in all in a row like that, but that's... That's a very interesting kind of rattly kind of squeak call that recruits all the other birds from the colony to come and take advantage of the meal while they can.
Okay. So those are some, that's part of the vocabulary then of the cliff swallow. Who's another good example of a bird with sort of a vocabulary that we might start to listen to more carefully?
One of my favorite birds to talk about is the red-winged blackbird, which is one of the most abundant birds in North America. It's found almost everywhere. Most people have them either in their backyard or pretty close by. And the red-winged blackbirds are fun because both the male and the female have a song. And the songs are different. The male has a typical song, and then the female has a typical song that's different. So let's listen to the male song first,
okay.
And then we can listen to the female song and
okay.
See how they're different.
Okay. Okay, so that's the male, and again, that's looped, so we were hearing more than he'd do.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, he'd put 30 seconds in between those.
Okay.
But he says, "Konkaree." Is the male song.
Okay, and the female.
And then the female has a quite a different song.
Okay. Oh my goodness, it is very different.
Yeah, yeah. What the male and female will do a lot if they are a mated pair is they will duet using those two songs. So the male will start by singing Konkari, and then halfway through his song, his mate will chime in with her t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t- for a second in the middle.
Okay.
And I have a recording of that as well.
Okay, so let's hear just that one. All right, so that would just be the once back and forth that they would do.
Yeah.
You know, of course, I think people think that only male birds sing, that what you're just bringing this up, you know, male and female songs and so forth. A lot of people think, oh, males are the ones that are singing all the time. Many species, female sings as well.
Yeah, females sing actually in quite a few species.
Mm-hmm.
In some species, they sing the same song as the male. In some species, like the red-winged blackbird, they have their own different song.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. So what's next with Mr. Red-winged Blackbird?
Well, the songs we just heard are the most common kinds of songs, and that sends a particular message. The male gets up on his cattail in the marsh, and he sings his typical song to say, this is my territory. And the female is sending the same message with her song, this is my territory. The males will defend the territories against other males. The female will defend the territory against other females.
Oh.
Because neither of them wants, you know, somebody coming in and stealing their mate. When they duet like that, when they sing together at the same time, that's their way of telling each other, I love you. That's their pair bonding ritual. And at the same time, they're also telling everybody else in the marsh that they're together.
Oh.
Right? They're saying, I'm taken.
Oh.
And so if you go out to the marsh, because those two songs sound so different, and because the male and the female are rarely sitting right next to each other, you know, usually the male's up high where you can see him, and often the female's down in the reeds. But next time you're out, listen, and if you hear that male sing, and then halfway through his song, if you hear that ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-jeer from somewhere else, could be down out of sight, you'll know that his mate is actually answering him, and that then that you're listening to a mated pair. And each the male and the female both, they also have a second song type. So red-winged blackbirds are wonderfully complex. They have really a lot to say, a lot of words in their language.
Uh-huh.
So the male has a different song that you don't hear very often. It's called his flight song.
Oh.
Because he usually only gives it when he's flying, and he usually only gives it when he's flying out of his territory, when he's leaving the territory temporarily. He'll sing this song as he's on his way out. Our best guess as to why he does that is that he's telling his mate, honey, I'll be back in a bit. He's basically letting her know that she's got to hold down the fort while he's off.
Oh.
And his flight song is actually much longer and more complex than his normal song.
So let's just hear this one once, the male flight song. Well, it is different.
That was all just one long flight song, yeah, with a lot of cheer, cheer, and you don't hear that very often in the marsh. They don't give it very often, but they do it once in a while, if you'll listen. And then the female has another song type as well that she gives that's more aggressive. The one we heard earlier is more like her courtship song that she gives with her mate, and this is the one that she gives when she really wants to get somebody out of her territory, right? A much more aggressive kind of song.
Okay, and that's looped again, but boy, I don't want to stay around her.
Yeah, you can hear it's
going
kind of
away.
An angrier sound. Yeah.
I'm going away, definitely. It's funny, I have a lot of house wrens also, you know, right by the house. And I feel like they're yelling at me all the time. They have a bawdy voice, you know.
Well, they have a beautiful song, and then they have some really, really harsh chatters when they get upset.
Yeah, they, ooh, it's a little bird, but it's got a lot to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to get into some tips and so forth, because I think that, as I said with a couple of times already, with the book, at first I was like, oh, I'm looking at these pictures, these spectrograms, you know, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing and what I'm seeing, and I've just gotten deeper and deeper and deeper into it, and again, using the audio files as well. What I found was that early in the book, you really pared down kind of what I should be thinking about. And I've been listening to birds for, you know, I don't know, 35 years or something, but very amateurishly. And I never organized my thinking as sharply as you have enabled me to start to do. You said that we should ask ourselves just two questions about the patterns of repetition and speed to at least start to sort of zero in on who's doing the singing. Can you explain that?
Yeah. In order to talk about bird sounds and really understand them, in order to understand what we're hearing, we need to kind of have a shared vocabulary. And so a really simple thing to listen for is, first of all, are the notes in the bird's song the same or are they different?
Okay.
Is it the same note being repeated
right.
in that bird's song, or is each note different from the last in that bird song? That's the first thing
okay.
to ask yourself. And then the second thing to ask yourself is, are those notes slow or fast?
Okay.
And the basic rule of thumb I use is, are they slow enough that you can count them, or are they too fast to count?
Okay.
And if you can answer those two questions, which anybody should be able to answer, you can tell what kind of basic category of sound you're listening to.
Okay.
So, for example, if you are hearing the same note repeated over and over again, and it's slow enough to count, we're going to call that a series.
All right.
But if you hear the same note repeated and it's too fast for you to count, they all run together kind of into one sound, and we call that a trill.
Okay. So I'm thinking, and tell me if I'm even close, I'm thinking a series is a tufted titmouse, maybe, and a
yep.
trill is a chipping sparrow.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I don't know what birds we're going to hear, but should we hear a single example?
I think we're going to hear those two birds.
Oh, you're kidding me. You're kidding me. Wow, boy, do I have ESP.
Those are, I think, my examples, yeah.
That's funny, because they're two of my, you know, mainstay. I mean, I've got a lot of both in the garden, so that's why I say them. So let's hear one instance of the series.
There's your titmouse.
Okay, so it's slow enough to count, but it's the same note being repeated, so that's a series. And then let's hear a trill. Mm-hmm. My little friends.
And that's the chipping sparrow.
Yeah.
And you think of it kind of just as a single trill, but it's actually, if you listen to it, it's the same note, but it's just being repeated really, really fast so that it all just kind of runs together into one sound.
Okay. All right.
And then if the notes are different,
yeah.
We'll have two different words for that. So if the notes are different and they're slow, so that you can hear each one clearly and count them, that's what we call a phrase. And then if the notes are different and they are so fast that they all run together and you can't figure out how many notes you're hearing, we call that a warble.
All right. So shall we hear a phrase?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's that?
That's an eastern meadowlark singing.
Okay. It's not someone who lives with me. I knew that.
Yeah.
I don't know the sound, but I didn't know what it was. An eastern meadowlark. So it's different notes.
Yeah.
But
you can hear there's about five or six notes there,
okay.
and each one's a little different.
Okay.
And but you can pretty easily tell that there's only a few, and you can count them. Whereas if you hear a whole bunch of different notes jumbled all together, that's what we call a warble.
Okay.
And I believe the example for this is a house finch.
Okay. A warble, but not from a warbler, from a house finch.
Yeah, actually, warblers don't generally warble.
Oh, dear. Now I'm confused.
Yeah.
So by just doing those two things, asking those two questions, and then those understanding those sort of two subdivisions within each one. I mean, it right away makes it clearer. And then if you have the book in your hand, the book has sort of these ways, indexes and so forth, that help you to then look at the group of birds that it might be. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah. So every sound in the book is listed in the index in a group of all the sounds that are similar to it.
Right.
So you can listen, you can look up any sound you want if you want to go and if you hear something that sounds kind of like a titmouse and you're not sure what else it might be, then you can go look up titmouse and look up the titmouse song, and it'll give you a list of all the other birds that sound similar.
Right.
So that you can go then to the website, and instead of having to sort through 5,000 sound files, you can narrow it down to the ones that it's likely to be.
Okay. We only have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to ask you, since I'm getting all this advice, free advice here, where else besides the sound website, and we should give the it's petersonbirdsounds.com and the book. What other things online? I've seen you refer to a website sometimes on your own website, Xenocanto. I don't know if that's Xenocanto or Xenocanto.
I think we mostly pronounce it Xenocanto.
Xenocanto.org or something. Yeah, and so that's one sort of where a lot of people who are interested in bird sound share things. Any other places that we should be looking and tips about learning? Yeah.
Yeah, so Xenocanto, and that's Xeno-Canto.org, is a place where people can upload bird sounds that they themselves recorded.
Uh-huh.
And right now, I think they have something like 9,700 species represented.
Wow.
So it's something like it's over 95% of all the birds in the world are on Xenocanto right now, that you can just type in a bird and listen to it, hear all the recordings that anybody has uploaded from all around the world. And then eBird actually gives you similar functionality. So if you go to eBird.org/media, you can, again, type in any bird sound, and there you get not just the sounds but also the photos that people have uploaded themselves from all around the world.
And then your website is earbirding.com, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, some of your blog posts, past blog posts, are really interesting, and I'll share some of my favorites with the transcript of this show. But I'm really glad to speak to you in person, and as I said, I'm just getting deeper and deeper and deeper into the book. Give me another year to sort of, as they said in, I think, a Robert Heinlein's science fiction book, grok it, G-R-O-K, to really get it, to grok it a little bit better.
Because right,
it's a whole other language for me. But Nathan Piplow, author of Peterson Field Guide to Bird Sounds of Eastern North America, will have a book giveaway, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. And thanks to all of you for listening, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or at facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy birding, meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.